All right. Okay, so it's kind of funny to me because look at all we got. And then we're going to have next Thursday. That's when I want to see what we got. All right. Now, how many of you, now I'm not going to ask you to stand up and prove it, but I do want to know how many of you have any extensive background in learning another language? I know you do. You do. Okay. What is the language you have worked on? Is it Greek?
French.
What about you?
German.
And yours is Portuguese and Spanish, right? All right. If you have worked extensively on another language, you know that one of the things you would love to be able to do is to speak just fluently in that other language. It's like a dream, almost like magic, you know, to pick up this book with all these inscrutable marks, be able to read that. And if we could just have a pill or something that you could take and do that, be wonderful. And one of the reasons we're so amazed as we read about the tongues that the apostles spoke in on the day of Pentecost is they were able to do that without studying. But I am sorry to have to tell you, there is no easy way in the whole world to learn any language in the whole world. It takes work. And the thing you've got to do is you've got to learn some nuts and bolts before you can get putting engines together and putting cars together and driving cars or airplanes. There are some nuts and bolts, and in language we call that the alphabet. Words are made of letters. We have to know what the letters are, and we have to know the sounds of the letters, and we have to know how to put the letters together. So that's the nitty-gritty that you have to go through. I mean, there is simply no way to even start learning the language until you learn how to say the words that are in that language. There's another thing that I want to mention to you. Depending on how far you want to go with this, if your plan is to just get to where you can pronounce words, hold them in your head long enough to look them up in a lexicon, by the end of this 6 weeks, I plan for you to be able to do that. If you want to really work at it and go beyond that, you'll be well on your way to doing some rudimentary reading. You can be doing some rudimentary reading by the end of this 6 weeks. And if you want to stay with it, I'm ready to stay with it just as long as you are. We can go all the way through the grammar book if you want to. By the time we do that, you'll be getting pretty easy with reading in the Greek New Testament. So we'll just see. Now, I have a couple of books, and I don't think I have them in here, but I do have a couple of books that are simple grammars that you can choose. One of them is written by Guy N. Woods. It's a good grammar, a good Greek grammar. And there's one by Vine, W.E. Vine, the Vine's Expository Dictionary Man. So I have those books for you to see, and if your idea is merely to just learn how to pronounce words and look some words up and things like that, a simple grammar like that would be fine. So at the end of this 6 weeks that we're going to study, if you have decided you want to go into it more deeply, then there are appropriate grammars for you to get. But the grammars cost a lot. That's one reason why I did not want to start out with everybody shelling out a bunch of money on grammar. I want you to find out, is this for me? And so that's the reason why I made these lessons here. And so we'll use this lesson. We'll work on this tonight and maybe even some next time. And by then, you should be in a position to know whether you want to buy one of just the inexpensive grammars to give you some of the basic information or whether you want to go a little more deeply into the matter. And so that's what I'm going to try to aim for tonight. I think that's all the preliminaries that I need to say. Somewhere I've got those two books, so I'll try to locate them, let you look them over before you leave tonight. All right, so here we go. Now, you have there on the page before you, that first sheet, you have the alphabet. Now, as you look at the alphabet, that is a printed alphabet. When it was written, it would not be quite as neat. It was incredible how neat the scribes could be when they wrote. And if you look in the very left-hand column, you'll see the capitals. And you will observe that a lot of those capitals are exactly the same as the capitals that we have in our language. And we just use those in our language. So But when you look at that next column, the second column, this is the letters and the size and the shape of the letters that are most commonly used. These are the ones that by far you would see printed in your Greek New Testament and things like that. There are capital letters, but they don't make use of capital letters near as much as we do. There are a lot of words that we would capitalize that word, and they do not. So they don't use capitals as much. And so in most of the grammars, they do not emphasize learning the capitals until you need them, and then you learn them. Now, if you were going to be a textual scholar, and you were going to decipher manuscripts, then you would need to know that capital, the line of capitals, like the back of your hand, because a great deal of our earliest Greek manuscripts were written in all caps. They were called uncial manuscripts. They were written virtually without punctuation, without spaces between the words. And you would think, oh, that would have been impossible. But you will find that a person who is very fluent in his own language, and fortunately most people are fairly fluent in their own language, but if you're literate, if you can read, you could cram all those letters together and you wouldn't have much trouble breaking the words down. You know what I mean by that? No spaces at all. In English, we could still, very quickly, we could adapt. But when we're not used to Greek, it is a job. And one of the things that I did years ago, I took Larry Rouse, Bob Hutto, and Lynn Huggins all the way through Machen's Grammar. By the time we got through with it, what we were doing was I was making blowing up pictures of like the Sinaiticus manuscript in the Greek, and we were deciphering it. That was a lot of fun. But we're a long way from that. Okay. So in that second line, this is the form that we're going to be using. And you want to start right out by learning how to say the letters as they are there. In other words, alpha is not alpha. Now, in biology, we can talk about the alpha male. We can talk about alpha particles. But in Greek, you don't talk about alpha anything. It's alpha. And be sure don't say awful. It's not awful, it's alpha. Okay? So work on getting that right. Another thing I want to tell you about the alphabet before we actually get into it. English is a weird language. English is a weird language. Let me point out like this. Now, how do you say O-U-G-H? Well, if you put a T, or if we put an R, or if we put a T-H and a T, or if we take the T off the end, and see, that's just a few. Another thing, now that's a big advantage that Greek and nearly every other language in the world has. But now you take the English letter W. And what I'm leading up to is this, that we don't use the initial sound of W in anything. It is always wa, wa. But in the Greek alphabet, every letter that you say, the initial sound of that letter is the sound it's going to have when you put it together into a word. So in alpha, it's going to be ah, ah. Beta, it's going to be ba. And so you're going to put those together. A lot of people that have never studied language have the idea that, like if you began to learn, let's just say we had a kappa and an alpha and a tau, K-A-T. They would think that we would be supposed to say, kappa alpha tau. No, what you're doing is you're saying the name of the letter, and that's not what we're doing. We want the sound, that initial sound, ka-a-t, kat. That'd be the nearest you'd get to cat. Ka-a-t. Okay, now let's look at the letters themselves, and you have the column down there. So here's something that I want to show you. This is the reason for writing it. There's a way to write these. And the alpha, imagine that it's a set of ice tongs. It's a set of ice tongs. Or Imagine an 8 with the bottom of the 8 cut off, so that you would start like that. Start at the upper and come around like that. Now, the exact shape of it, the length of those things, that'll vary with each person. You have to learn to adapt to different scribes and the different ways that they would write it. But that's basically the idea of the alpha. Now, the beta, when you write the beta, the stem of the beta is going to come below the line. And you kind of see that from the letters there. But alpha, beta, and then the gamma, you come with a short little curved mark on the left and then the longer curved mark on the right, and it too sticks below the line. So alpha, beta, gamma. And you realize that our word alphabet comes from alpha, beta. There's a Latin word, so it goes back a long way, a Latin word alphabet. So it's based on this. So alpha, beta, gamma. And some of the things that I really enjoy learning about language is that the very letters that we see here are, for the most part, the same as our English letters. And that means that our English letters and these Greek letters go back to the Phoenician language and the Phoenician alphabet. And originally, all the alphabets went back to a picture that you drew. And the picture that was drawn of this in ancient times was more something like that. And if you were to take that symbol, and put it like this, that would be the idea of an ox. An ox. And so, you know, when you're writing, you can't stop and paint a picture of an ox. So you have to stylize it. In other words, make it something you draw pretty quickly, and then everybody comes to agree that this represents a sound. This represents a sound. It represents the ah sound. And so we keep on messing around with that, and it changes and modifies and everything until finally we come up with the alpha, or we come up with the A in English, but it's all the same. It all goes back to those letters. And you could do that with nearly every one of them. Like this one is a house, beta, or bait. Now see, in the Hebrew, you've got aleph. And aleph in Hebrew means either an ox or leader of a thousand. Leader of a thousand. And the bait is the word for house. And so you go on through and you have, that goes back to the pictographic character of these letters. Well, now, we're not worried about that, but it is interesting. So alpha, beta, and then I have to remember which language I'm in. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Again, my writing is not the very best, and I wish I could be smoother in my writing. Now, that is not supposed to drop below the line, the delta. You'll notice in the capital delta, it is a triangular-shaped thing, and that's where we get the name for a river delta, where the mouth of the river forms a delta, flows out from the river, and spreads the sediment out like this, the delta. So it's based on that, the shape of that letter. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. Epsilon, and it sits on the line. And then the zeta has a little curl up at the top, curves around, and has a little hook on the bottom, and the line would go right through that hook. The line would go right through the hook. So the hook sits just below the line. Yeah, okay. All right, let me just do that right now. And again, pardon me, I wish it was a little bit smoother, and it'll get smoother as time goes along. I kind of loosen up a little bit to it. All right, but on the alpha, you start the upper. Now, you see, that one is different. But I just can't draw them the same. But you just have your little tongs there. And then your beta, you start from below, and you have it like that. And then you have the curve there and the curve there with the tail dropping below the line. So again, you see, you'd curve over like that, and then curve down like that. Okay. All right, now the delta, we come up here. Now that's a pretty good delta. The epsilon, a very simple, it's a very recognizable E. So E. Now the zeta, you start up here with your little loop, curve around, and then the hook down there like that. The zeta. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta. Eta is a crippled N. It's not an N at all. That's just to help you get the idea. Here's the way it looks. It has a little short leg over here and a little longer leg over there. So that's the eta. The eta. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta.
Long leg of the N goes below the line.
Yeah. Zeta, eta. So here's the eta up here. And then theta. And it is a word, I mean a letter that is shaped like this with a crossbar through it. So, without the wiggle. More like an oval with a crossbar through it. And that's the TH, theta. now, you take words in our language like theological, it begins with that letter right there, the TH sound, theta. So, zeta, eta, theta. Like if you were writing a poem in Greek, you'd want to remember those. Zeta, eta, theta. Zeta, eta, theta. And here is one that we have in English. And it is the iota, except it is not the iota. It is the iota. Iota. It is not the iota. Again, this is an English thing we're used to, like the alpha. Except in Greek, it's not alpha, it's alpha. It is not iota, it's iota. Now, I'm not saying Y-O-T-A, iota. I'm giving it a very quick little I, iota. Iota. Hear that? I slowed it down. Iota. Except you don't give the E that much impact. Iota. Now, fortunately, when you use that letter in a word, you're not going to be saying iota anyhow. You're going to just be saying E or E. That's going to be the sound it has. It's going to be like your I in English, except it won't be ever I. It'll be E or E. So, iota. Now, this iota is the smallest letter in the Greek alphabet, just as the yod in Hebrew is the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So when Jesus said, not one jot or tittle, this is the letter he was talking about. This is the letter, whether it's the iota. And can you hear that the iota and the yod are somewhat kin to one another? They are related. Yeah, they are. All right. So the iota. And then here's an easy one, kappa. You come down like this, and then you come curving up and then curving back again, and you do it without even lifting your pen. So you'd come down, up, and then curve around again. You wouldn't put that beautiful little loop there. I just did that spontaneously. So you just come down and up and then back. Now that's a pretty good kappa right there. I have to pick mine out and say that was a pretty good one. So, kappa, and then lambda, and that should be fairly equal there. Let me do it again. Now, that's a fairly good lambda. So, kappa, lambda. Now, notice that the order, A, B, we don't have a C, D, E. You see some correspondence with the English alphabet, and over here, K, L, K-L and then M, except you call it mu. Now that's a pretty good mu. Mu and then nu. Nu, you curve the left and come up like that. curve to the left, come up like that. That's the new. Mu, nu. So, K-L-M-N. So, you see that far, we're just right on target with the English alphabet. K-L-M-N. So, Kappa, Lambda, Mu, Nu. Now, I hope you've had fun. Because now we have Gzi. Gzi. Now, not Gzi, but you try not to put any between the G and the Z. Gzi. Okay? You just have to do the best you can on that. But you don't want to say like athlete. When you say athlete, there's going to be a little tiny vowel that jump in there the best you can do anyhow. And in the Hebrew language, they realized that. And so they would go ahead and honestly stick the little vowel in there. They'd call it a half vowel or a shiva. Well, when you're saying gzi, we don't want to make it guzzy. And also, it's so much fun to write. So I'm going to start on the second line now of the alphabet. All right, you have to start with a little loop at the top. And then you come curving around and curving around, and then a little hook at the bottom. And the line goes right through the hook. So it's a little difficult. Gzi. And so this would have the sound of like eggs, the G-G-S on the end of eggs. Eggs. That's the sound of it. Gzi. That'd be the sound it would have in a word. So, Lambda, Mu, Nu, Gzi. All right. Now we're back on easy ground. Omicron. Omicron. All right, now let me show you something interesting about Omicron. And I will write this up here. Now just focus for a moment on that word right there. What would you think micron means? Small. So this is what the Greeks called, guess which O? The small O, the little O. It's the micron, omicron. And we'll get to big O later. So omicron, and then here is another one. In math, it is pi. In Greek, it most definitely is not pi. It is p. And so if you're in your math class, you must say pi because everybody will think you are nuts to call it p in there. But if you're in the Greek class and you say pi, then everybody's going to know you're just a novice in Greek. So you got to remember, am I in math or am I in Greek? And I'll tell you, it gets confusing sometimes. Especially if it's an early morning class. It's an early morning class. I'll tell you what, you study a language like this, and then you go and you take some German, and say this letter right here is always A in Greek, but in German it is O. And you get in there, and especially there is a Greek word that is this word here. And you would say, auta, auta. Then you're in Greek. I mean, then you're in German class. And it is auto. And when you read it, auta, your German professor looks at you like, what is the matter with you? And you can't sit there in the class, well, sir, I got it mixed up with Greek. Because everybody will say, oh, yeah, sure. You know, so you just have to say, I'm sorry, I'm dumb, I just couldn't remember. Because you can't explain it. So, such is the fun. All right, omicron, P. All right, and here is another one. That one is called Hro. Not Ro. Hro. It is pronounced as if it were H-R-O-W. But fortunately, you would have to worry about that in a word only if it comes at the beginning of the word. Anywhere else in the word, it's just a good old sound. But if it's the initial letter of any word, you have to put that. Now, a common word in Greek that would involve that is one of the terms for word itself. Hrema. Hrema is a word where that it would begin with that. Won't worry about that right now. All right, which one? This, the letter rho? Okay. And it would stick below the line also. All right, so you just come up like that. You start down here and just come up. It looks sort of like a wimpy little P.
So now where is the line on the page?
All right, it'd be coming along, coming along like that. And then here is your P. You just put the two legs down and then the omicron. P, rho. Rho, and then sigma. Sigma. You just start level, coming this way, go down, and then curve it up. Sigma. That's the S. Sigma. And again, that's the name of the letter, but in a word, it would just be S. Now, fortunately, we don't have many of these that will do this in Greek. But when the S is final, it has a form that looks more or less like our S. If you just make a regular, just a regular looking S, except shorten it at the bottom, just shorten it a little bit, then you will have the final, the sigma, the final form. So you just, sort of like that. You see that? See, I abbreviated the southern part of the S. It would sit on the line. It would sit on the line. The sigma would sit on the line. Okay, sigma, tau. Now, tau, just don't worry too much about it. Just make it a T like that. Now, technically, you start a little low on the left. See that? And then come on down like that. But you just don't worry about that when you're writing it. Writing Greek is an aid to learning. In other words, you have to understand that we're not really preparing ourselves to be Greek scribes. But you have to learn to write the Greek letters to practice and do the things you need to learn it. You have to practice. And so that means you have to be able to write. Now, some people think that when they've gotten where they can translate Greek into English, they are on their way to becoming a Greek scholar. But actually, the test is your ability to take the English and put it into the Greek. And so more advanced grammars will have you doing more English to Greek exercises than Greek to English. Now, Greek to English, you know, you can just buzz through them after a while, but you have to do some thinking to take the English and do the rearranging that you have to do to cast it into Greek modes of thought and translate it into Greek. But for now, we're learning this. In other words, I'm trying to reassure you. I'm trying to ensure that we're going to have more than two or three next Thursday night. So I'm wanting you to know that this is a means to an end. And give yourself some slack about exactly the form you write it. Because you're not going to be writing this to be read by people 2,000 years from now. You're going to be writing it to practice writing forms and things like that to help you learn. So, don't get uptight. Sigma, tau, upsilon. It's just a U. You don't have to put the little thing on it that we do for a U. It's just a horseshoe. Tau, upsilon. We're almost through. Phi. And that would come below the line. So, you just draw a circle. Draw a line down through it. The line comes below this vertical stroke. The bottom of it comes below the line. And by the way, you usually don't have a line anyhow. The line is in your mind. So, again, don't worry too much about it. Phi. Ki. Now, that ki comes below the line. And in printed text, that's about the only way you can tell the difference between it and a printed kappa. And see, we're not going to be doing that for a little while, but when we do, things you will have to learn is that in printed texts, they will vary the shape of the letters from one text to the other, and you have to kind of learn. But once you know the alphabet well, you can make adjustments like that real quickly. But now, like, if you were looking in the Greek New Testament and you found the kappa, as it is printed in the Greek text that I have over in the, you know, here in the study, over there in the books, you would find that it looks for all the world just like a kappa, except it goes below the line. And so that way you can instantly tell whether it is a kappa or whether it's a ki. Phi ki. Now, the C involves sounds that we don't really make. Like if we have in English a PS, there rarely we have people talk about psi powers, of which I don't think there are any, but they talk about them anyhow. Psi. But in English, we almost have nothing that where we say the P like that. It's silent. Like we say psalms. Whereas the Greeks would have said psalmos or psalmoi or something like that. So this is the way they'd do it. You'd kind of come down like that and then split it. Looks kind of like a harp with one string. So, phi, ki, psi, and then omega. Omega. It just looks like a kind of a rounded, very happy W. Very content, fat W. But it's not a W. It's an O. And look at this. That O there is spelled, so what is the mega telling you? This is the big O. So this is the little O, this is the big O. So, omega, omicron. All right, now let me erase some of the extraneous material here because we need to focus now on the alphabet itself a little while. And I'm not removing the alphabet. But we need to notice some things about it now. Now, this is something that you need to just work on, and that material there can help you with that. Okay. Now then, look at these letters that I'm going to underline. You know what these are. These are vowels. Now, the interesting thing about, and a lot of interesting things, but you see you don't have two kind of alphas, a long one and a short one, even though you do, but they don't differentiate in shape. So when you use an alpha, it may be a long one or it may be a short one, you just have to learn from other things. However, let me assure you, you don't have to worry about that much. That'll take care of itself. The thing to note is that we have an epsilon here, which is an E, but we have another E. Here's the short one. Here's the long one. So that Greek differentiates between some of its long forms of the vowel, and short forms, and some of the long ones. So E and eta, or epsilon and eta. This is the short one. This is the long one. Now, the iota does not distinguish in its shape the difference. But you'll have a long there and a short. But again, you don't need to worry about that. That'll take care of itself. And then the the omicron, you have the short O and the long O. See? Now in the upsilon, there's another example of one that can be long or short. But there's no differentiation in the, no different letter for the long one. So the O... All right, this is a short. It's short vowel, and the omega is the long version of it.
Why would the sheep say omicron and then obey?
Because in our southern English, now you're not quite as southern as we are, but actually, if yeah, yeah, I meant it as a compliment, because of your pronunciation. But we say obey, but actually that is not the way to pronounce the word. The word is obey. You don't say obey. We do, and I'm okay with that. But that's the reason why. That's the reason why. Yeah, and it is funny, you know. You look at different grammars also, and they will give you some different pronunciations. Like there's one over there that says that the short alpha is pronounced as the A in cat, ah. Well, other grammars don't make any difference at all. So when you say it, don't worry about differentiating between it. So where some grammars do and some grammars don't. So why not go with ones that don't? They're good ones. They're scholars. And I don't want it to be too complicated. Besides that, the only reason I want to be able to pronounce it is so that I can remember it. I cannot remember a word if I cannot envision that word in my mind and say that word. I've got to be able to handle that word. So once I can do that, I'm not going to worry too much about exactly what the value of the long alpha is as opposed to the short alpha. It has more to do with accenting anyhow. Whereas these involve the actual choice of the letter itself. So the E and the O have a long form. And that you would just learn with the word. The word would distinguish. Now, one of the things that's very interesting about language, and about some languages especially, is that some languages don't have any vowels. Like Hebrew does not have any vowels. Now, Hebrew had an aleph, but that was not a vowel. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. All right, let me ask you something. If you were going to say the word H-O-N-E-S-T, try saying it with only the H. You don't have the O-N-E-S-T. You know, all you could do is get your mouth ready. And at the back of your throat, you have what's called a glottal stop. You have prepared to say, ah, but you can't say it until you have a vowel. You can't use consonants until you have vowels. Now, the Hebrews didn't write theirs in, but they had them. They had them. And then later on, they wrote all sorts of little symbols around to tell you what the vowel was that went there because time went along and people forgot how to say it, and so they wanted to be sure that everybody remembered. But by the time we get to Greek, we've got the vowels written in. So this is a development in the language. All right, now, hasn't this been fun? Hasn't it been fun? It's going to be real fun. All right. What's this letter?
Alpha.
It's what?
Alpha.
All right, this one?
Beta.
Beta.
Gamma.
Delta.
Epsilon.
Zeta.
Eta.
Theta.
Yoda.
Kappa.
Lambda,
Mu,
Nu,
Xi,
Omicron,
P,
Rho,
Sigma,
Tau,
Upsilon,
Phi,
Chi,
Psi,
Omega. Now, you need to work on that. For one reason, you can't use a lexicon if you don't know the alphabet. I mean, you could spend endless hours. I mean, you spend endless hours looking, you know. Just hope I eventually find this. But you have to know, because this is the order, you know. You have to know that. That's a very good reason for knowing it. But even more importantly, you need to know every letter and the sound of every letter. Now, let's try this. Instead of calling the name of the letter, let's just give the sound of the letter, and we'll say like, ah, ba. Ga, da, e, z, a, f, I, k, l, m, n, z, a, p, r, s, t, u, f, k, ps. Oh. Oh, wasn't that fun? All right, now, all right, let's try a few things here now. All right, what are these letters? What is this one? Beta, Omicron, Gamma. Now, the initial sound is B, A, G. What's this word? Just pronouncing the sounds of it, it'd be what? Bog. See, I picked that one because there's this big English word that's bog. And that helps us to practice the pronunciation. See, that's what I'm wanting you to see. Now, the funny thing about it is, we just uttered sounds, bog, bog, which don't have any meaning in Greek. But they are conveying a meaning to us. And the way they do is because they are conveying sounds. And when we put the sounds together, we say, oh, yeah, I know what that is. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're learning the Greek language. You're learning a combination of different sounds that adds another word to your vocabulary. And the brain is amazing in that it has the ability to automatically sort the words that you know in different languages. You have the ability to sort them. The brain can do that. And it can do it in such a way as then you get in this setting, you're using this collection of your words. You get in another setting, you're using another collection of your words, and your brain will sort it out. It's amazing. All right, let's try a few others now. All right, boy, oh boy, this is going to be a good one right here. Watch this now. All right, we're going to start out with that nice letter like that. All right, let's name the letters first. Beta, Alpha, Lambda, Lambda, Omega. Now let's go back and put the sounds. Ba, A, La, La, O. Now put them together and you have Balo. Now that is a Greek word. And we get... I don't know. I have wondered about it, and I have thought that we probably did. But I don't remember for sure. I don't remember because I didn't look it up. So I'm going to look it up. All right, here we go. We're almost there. This is one of the most exciting moments. Okay. All right. I believe that that bears it out. That we have an English word. If we just take that part, what would that word be in English? Ball. Now, you know what you do with a ball? You throw it. You cast it. Balo means I throw, I cast. So, according to the dictionary, there is some derivation of our word ball from that word, balo. So there you have a word. There you have a word, balo. Now here's another thing. Once you get your basic letters down, then the next thing that you must be consumed with is learning as many words as you can. And it has to be a consuming thing if you're going to really get good at it. In learning any language, that is the key. We had a translator who was, he had a Russian father and a Czech mother. And I met him, 13, 14 years ago. And he had a knapsack, like all good Czechs. And he would get out of his sack anytime he heard a word that he didn't know. Now here he was, fluent in Russian, fluent in Czech, fluent in English. I don't know how many other languages he was fluent in. But in any of those languages, when he heard a word that he had not heard before, gets his notebook out. He wants to ask you about that word. He writes that word down in his notebook. He gives a definition of it. And he adds that word. So that's what we're doing now. You've got your first word. What was it? Balo. I throw. I cast. All right. Let's get another one. Okay, this is going to be a real good one. You will know this one almost instantly. Name the letters. Go what? Gamma. Omega. Now the sounds. L, E, G, O. However, this is not Lego blocks. That's not what it means. But a Greek professor years ago told me about this, and it stuck. So it's pretty good. Lego, I say. It means I say. So if you say, Lego, I say, it stuck with me for since the Civil War. So, you know, that's great. All right, here's a word, Lego. Lego, I say. I say, I am saying. I say, balo, I throw, I cast. All right, so you got that one? Lego, Lego. And we're not going to worry too much about the words right now, but I'm just, this is what you've got to do. All right, now, sure enough, let's use a little fancier word. I think I'll use this word. For what? You mean as in who I am? Huh? Yeah, yeah. Except you normally would not put the ego with it. I say ego. That is the word for I. And also the word we get ego from. But when you put I with the verb, you're saying I say. Because ordinarily the verb says the I or the you or whatever. It's included in the verb. So you would use the pronoun only when you are emphasizing, like usually through a contrast in some way. I say this, but you say, you know, in that case you'd put the pronoun and then the opposite pronoun, you know, the I and the you. But ordinarily the verb will contain the pronoun idea. It will tell you the person. Jeff?
I was just curious, in Matthew 5, when Jesus said, you've heard Moses say, but I say
yeah,
you,
yeah. I'm pretty sure that he does say
ego.
Right. Yeah.
So when you say like the Lego or the Malo, like most languages, they have like an infinitive form, like
yes,
or
yes,
or
yes,
but
yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. The Lego, the vocabulary form, if you looked it up in your lexicon, your Greek lexicons, in verbs, it's going to give you the first person singular form is the vocabulary form. Okay? Now, in some languages, it might give you the infinitive form, and they'll vary on that. But in Greek, the vocabulary form of the verb is the first person singular. That's what it will be. And so, Lego is I say or I am saying. Now, this is anticipating. We're not ready to get into this yet. So we'll wait for any further thing about that. We're just basically learning. Believe me, we are just knocking on the door. I mean, tense of the verb and all that. That's way down the road. My goal is to get you where you can say some words and put some sentences together, because then you begin to get immediate feedback. And also begin to recognize some words, like this one right here. Now, some of you will immediately know what word this is, probably. And you'd have to put ordinarily, and that's something we also will not get into for a little while. Breathings and accents. But now, let's say the letters here. Epsilon, kappa, kappa, lambda, eta, sigma, iota, alpha. The sounds, e, k, k, l, a, s, e, a. Put them together. Ecclesia. 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 And so this is the word for assembly or mob or church. Ecclesia. And you see, in our English, we get ecclesiastical. The word Ecclesiastes comes from the idea of one who addresses the assembly, koaleth. Koaleth, which in Hebrew has to do with the assembly or the congregation. So Ecclesiastes is just an effort to translate koaleth into Greek letters. and make him the addresser of the one who is teaching the group. He's got some things to say to the group. This is Koheleth. So ecclesia. All right, now see, that's a good basic word there, but and I'm not really trying yet to enrich your vocabulary. I'm just wanting you to practice. See, we're practicing saying the words. We've got to learn to crawl before we can walk. And so this is one of the most basic skills. But I want to tell you, I think you're doing wonderfully well. I believe that this is one of the best classes I have ever had. So yeah. All right, now let me say, look in your let me see this form, this page right here. No. All right, on that third sheet you've got, we didn't cover everything in this first lesson tonight. We're not through with that. But look at that on page 12, part that says exercise. After learning to write the small letters of the alphabet and give the names of the letters in order, the student should practice pronouncing Greek words and sentences found anywhere in the book. Now then, even on page 13, you have some, let me see if you have any on pages 10 and 11. Hardly any. You hardly have any to practice on there. So we'll just have to, because there's no way I can do the whole thing. You know, I couldn't make the whole book. I didn't even go ahead and get two or three lessons. I got one whole lesson because I knew we wouldn't get more than one lesson tonight. But anyway, you need to try to do as much of this as possible. And in other words, you don't have many Greek words you can practice on. But now, like on page 13, you've got some, like there in the middle of the page, below preliminary definitions. 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got a few words there you can practice on. Anyway, you've also got the, if you wrote down the ones that I put up here, but just practice your letters, practice saying them, practice pronouncing them, practice saying the alphabet and everything, because that's the first step. You get to where you can put the letters together and say the words. But I mean, you really have been doing well on that tonight. So let me try one more. Let's try this one. And have you been able to write these down? Have any of you been able to? Okay. All right, here's another one then. All right, now you see the technique we've used. We won't keep on using that technique because as soon as you get good with it, you won't need to do that. You can instantly see the sounds and how they go together. But just keep on working the technique that I've shown you there until that becomes a very automatic, easy thing for you to do. So let's name the letters. Alpha, Nu, Theta, Pro, Omega, P, Omicron, Sigma. And notice the final S there? See that? The shape it is? Now the sounds. Let's get the sounds. Ah, N, F, R, O, P, A, S. So put this one together. These three, how would that go? Anth, Ro, Pas. Anthropos. The common word for man, human being. This is not the word for male, even though it can refer to a male. But it is the general word for human being. Anthropos. And so we get our words anthropology and anthropological and anthropomorphism and all those, any anthro words. So anthropos. Now there are a lot of other words that are simple words, and we're almost through. I tell you every time, I'm not going to just go over, but let me give you another word or two that you can practice on. I'm going to write a couple or three up here. All right, here's one. This is a delta, omicron, upsilon, lambda, omicron, sigma. And right now you don't have to worry about accent. Don't have to worry about it. Just get the basic word, delta, omicron, upsilon, lambda, omicron, sigma. And this is the word for a slave or a bondservant. Now here's one. I'm just trying to give you a few words you can practice on. And I'll move so you can see that again. Now this is one. I'll tell you what I'm going to do with that one. I'm going to let you look at that one. Can you figure out what that one is? All right. So how would you say it? Except, see, this is not omega. Apostolos. Apostolos. And as you see, it is apostle. Apostle. All right, so that gives you a few words that you can kind of practice on and on your words, and you've got the information in those sheets, and that will help you on your pronunciation. So look at that information on the sheets, and maybe that will help you out. All right, so that'll be the end of the class tonight. Now, does anyone have a question? Yeah. Yes. John 1. Yeah, yeah, I could do that. I could do that. Yeah, I'll do that. I have some. Okay. Anyone? I'm waiting on some of you creative ladies to come up with that. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta. I think it's going to be kind of tough. Sorry, I never learned a song. Brother Strigley did not teach us any songs. Now, he could sing. Boy, could he sing, but he didn't do it in Greek class. Okay. Yeah.
This is kind of an obscure question, but how much... what level does it become really useful in your study of the Bible? We have vines that...
I am really going to ask that because I'm going to tell all of you something just as frankly as I can. If you don't really enjoy this kind of thing, it is too much work to be of any use. Now, that's the fact. If you enjoy it, it can be of benefit. It can be of benefit, like, as you begin to understand some things about the tenses. There are a lot of examples that come to my mind. Say, in John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word. To learn that the imperfect tense suggests the ongoing past, the never beginning past. Here you have the Word that at the time of the beginning was and always was. Now, that really enhances that. Or you can take, like, in Ephesians 4, verses 11 beginning, he gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers. Now, the construction of pastors and teachers there is such, and there was a Greek scholar named Granville Sharp who elaborated this rule, probably, I can't remember the date, like 1819 or 1815 or something, but he made the point that when pastors and teachers are joined together in the construction, they are joined together in there, that they both apply to the same thing. You're not naming two different functions in the church. What it's saying is that the pastors are teachers, the pastors and teachers. And so that kind of thing, it really is useful and so on. So if you have an ear for music, I found if you have an ear for music, you probably have an ear for language. But now whether you also have the fun of learning a language, I don't know. To me, it is just, I love it. I love it. I would spend all my time doing it. I'll never learn all the languages I would love to learn. But I'll tell you again, if you don't enjoy it, it's not going to be worth the work. So if you find yourself in that category, learn enough to look up words and then don't worry about it. But if you want to learn it, I'll go with you as far as you want to go. Okay? Yeah.
Now, this is like the Koine Greek.
Yes, the Koine, New Testament.
And like, is it drastically different than the Greek of today?
You know, now this is an interesting thing. It is different. But sometimes we think of Greek as a dead language. Well, actually, Greek is like a stream, just like nearly every language you'd think of. Actually, Greek, it'd be hard to tell when Greek got started. But this is what I was going to say. A modern Greek person in Athens today would have less trouble reading the Greek of Homer, written 3,000 years ago. He would have less trouble reading that Greek than you and I would have reading the Chronicles of King Alfred, written like in 800 and something A.D. You know what I mean? 1,200 years ago, and we couldn't even dream of reading it. But a modern Greek could, with difficulty, he could read Homer. So there have been changes. And you have the classical period. Now, Homer is even before the classical period. Then you have the classical period when Attic was the language of Athens. The 5th and 4th centuries, Attic reigns supreme. Of all the dialects of Greek, it reigns supreme. And then it moderated as Alexander made his conquest and was adapted and made that very useful, almost universal language, absorbing vocabulary and things from, you know, all of his conquests. Not only did he conquer, but he was conquered somewhat. You know, wherever Greek went, this Greek adapted. And as that happened, it became this Koine. And so the date that's given for the time of the Koine is about 300 B.C. Well, that's just after Alexander's conquest. So from then until, and some say 330 A.D., some say 500 A.D., so, you know, I mean, it's not an exact thing. Nobody can, it's always funny to me as if in history somebody comes along, puts a big sign, this is it. Well, nothing happens that quick, unless it's just a battle that's over, but historical movements and influences usually take a long time, but still. But anyway, it's interesting to me that a modern Greek could come nearer reading Homer than we can read what is ancient English to us. Yeah, Daniel?
How was it that when the Romans conquered the areas that the Greek had originally, that they didn't all switch to Latin immediately?
Yeah, that's right. The Romans were conquered by the Greek also. The Greek was a superior language. And the Greeks themselves, their writers. See, the Romans recognized their own lack of sophistication. And when they came in contact with the Greeks, they recognized a superior literature, superior everything. And so because of that superior literature, the Roman writers in their Latin began to mimic the Greeks. Even the ones that wrote in Latin, they mimicked the Greeks. And so the Greeks swept and became the predominant language even throughout all the Roman Empire. And Latin was still spoken. It was still the language of the Romans, but Greek became the lingua franca of the day. And that's one reason why it's interesting that the New Testament manuscripts were written in Greek any later, and then it would have switched over to Latin. It did eventually switch over to Latin. But during the period that the New Testament manuscripts were written, Greek was still the lingua franca. And that's why they were just about all written. You know, when Jerome came along, he translated the scriptures into Latin. But by that time, the heyday of the Greek was passing. But before that, nearly everything was written. Now, they had some Latin translations, like the old Latin translation about 150 A.D. But still, it's interesting. And you can learn, there is no end to what you can learn about the language, the history. Oh, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I don't have time to learn it all either, and I'm sorry. Okay, I really enjoyed this. I had a great time. So I hope that you can be here next Thursday night.